Hey, it's Kristen. You're listening to Rational in Portland.
Welcome to Rational in Portland. I'm your host, Kristen. Today, we're continuing our neighborhood spotlight on the Stadium Hood neighborhood in West and Northwest Portland. And I have Laura Curry here with me, who lives in the Stadium Hood neighborhood, and she's also an artist and intentionally moved to Portland, intentionally bought a condo here. Laura, welcome. Thank you for coming.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about why you decided to buy your condo in Portland?
Sure. So I had a place. I lived in Seattle and Capitol Hill for a number of years, raised my twins there. Lived in New York for a minute. I was doing work, research in Latin America, South America, and North America. So that would include Bogota, Lima, different areas in South America, Mexico, the United States, and Canada. Doing that as an artist and also as a consultant. In my art practice, my research practice will be under the focus of gender and mobility. So that will typically be female-identified contexts, and I work specifically in the urban environment. So I'll work in cities. And then as a consultant, I work with urban planning and architecture, and I work with other city agencies. And again, those will be urban-centered projects. So I was doing a lot of traveling, and I wanted to purchase a place. I didn't, you know, I had sold my property. I'd sold my place in Seattle. And I thought, well, I want to have a pied-à-terre home. And so I was in Portland. I was actually on my way to Pittsburgh, to be quite honest. And
because you were thinking about purchasing in Pittsburgh?
Yep. I had been in Pittsburgh. I dug it. And I thought this will be good, you know. And I was house-sitting for a friend of mine in Portland and picked her up at the bus station. And she laughs at this. And in about 15 minutes, I said, you know, Portland's just not for me. It's just not going to be for me.
Why? Why not?
You know, I don't know why. I think because at the time, I just didn't see it as urban enough.
Yeah, well, yeah, I get that. Like too small?
Yeah.
Too townish?
Pittsburgh isn't small. Pittsburgh is small too. But it was...
It's very townish, I think, even now, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And so it was kind of, it just, the vibe just didn't, you know, mm-hmm. I was thinking more East Coast.
More cosmopolitan,
more,
maybe.
Like that, yeah.
Sophisticated.
Yeah. And not to say that Portland doesn't have its sophistication, but sure. It just was a little different. So, so I thought, well, I'll just check it out. And I saw the place that I eventually bought. And the reason I bought it, I went back in the evening and saw the vistas, and I have this northeast corner, and I see 5 miles out the 405 sweeping around and the headlights coming below me. And then I can also see the lights of the Pearl. And I thought, okay, this is cool. It was very cinematic. So I just said, yeah, let's do it. So I purchased it. I was working in and out of the country. I was renting it to people, coming back, taking care of business and all of that. And pandemic hit. I was here for a minute. Then I went back to Mexico because I was doing a residency there, a research residency, and working in the city of Monterrey, which is a metropolitan, it's a gigantic city, gigantic. Had to cease my work during the during COVID for a minute, then went back, was there for 2 years, 21 through 23, and I came back here a year ago November. and stayed here for the longest I've lived in the building. But I would be back and forth. I purchased in 2017. And every time I came back, I'd be like, what the hell is going on in this town, in this city? And then
what was precipitating that? Like, what were you noticing that would cause you to think
that? Tons of tents, tons of garbage, lots of unkept, just a city that felt to me, and I'm in the city, I'm in the downtown because that's what I prefer.
Yeah.
That was deteriorating. And I was surprised. And the cost of living was not low. So
it seems to be ever increasing, right? Which is right. Weird.
Yeah, it is weird. It is weird. So when I came back a year ago, November, I was, you know, it was the winter, so it's the freeze, that kind of thing is happening. Stuff is still going on around the building. But then the summer just blew my mind. It just blew my mind. So PBOT, in all of its infinite wisdom, designed a what's now called the Cooch Plaza, and that's outside of my kitchen window. And while I believe that their cycling path is wrongheaded, and I can say that from a position of authority because as a consultant and as a researcher, I am working with transportation in urban contexts. But PBOT does what it does. But I have watched this plaza be affected by the, I would say, the naivete and the sort of the blind eye of the city, the government, the departments that are meant to serve all citizens. And that when I say all citizens, I'm including myself, that what's coming up around me over the summer was just, it was fantastically horrible.
What specifically?
Okay, so tents, garbage, junkies selling, dealing drugs, physical assaults on safety, the biohazard, the constant onslaught of people that are allowed to behave in any sort of perverted way they want without intervention, unless it's from the citizens like myself and like others you have interviewed here or you've spoken with here. And that to me was a shock. And I am working on, you know, myself, I'm picking up garbage. I'm trying to like, what the hell is happening?
And you've seen a lot all over the world.
Oh, my God, yeah. I've never seen it. Never like this. I was sharing photos with my colleagues and my neighbors in Mexico because, of course, this whole sort of mythology about Mexico being such a horrible place, right? And I'm showing it to...
Fourth world. I'm right. Saying that in quotes.
Yeah, right. And the... I'm showing photos and it's like, this is Portland, Oregon, and people just cannot believe it. They can't believe it. This is not what you see in Mexico. You don't see this. Do you see areas where there is neglect? Absolutely. Do you see, like, okay, so Monterrey, I don't know how many millions of people, I could look it up, but it's in fact, I will look it up. I should have that. I saw when I was living there, I think I saw one junkie on the street. Let's see here. I'm going to look this up. Population. It's a metropolitan area. So it's got So it's 1,142,994 people. And that is
quite a, so we're at what? We're 600 something.
Right.
It's quite a bit bigger.
Yeah. So it's double. But now this is Monterrey. So it's a metropolitan. So this will be Monterrey's municipality. And then there are other municipalities around it that will be part of the metropolitan. So this is just Monterrey. This is just the city. So downtown, I saw one person in a tent, and that's it. Of course, culturally, it's very different because families and people will take people in, but there's less tolerance. There's just not tolerance for it. So anyway, as I'm coming back and forth into Portland, I'm seeing a demise. And then when I moved back, as I said, in November last, a year ago, last November, it was really shocking to me. It became clear that it was the citizens' responsibility to take care of themselves and their community. And I'm not laying this at the feet of the police. I am laying this at the feet of Multnomah County. The police that I have become associated with in my neighborhood, without exception, are patient, are overworked, are doing the very, very best that they can. So it's higher up the food
chain. Did that surprise you at all? Because in 2020, when we had this national racial reckoning mm-hmm. in the United States, as particularly in cities like Portland, Minneapolis, mm-hmm. we can all name them, LA, Austin, more progressive cities. I think I would have, I don't know that I felt hostile towards police generally, but I think I wouldn't have assumed that if I had interactions with them at all, not even as a citizen and regular interactions in any way, that would happen, that mm-hmm. it would be without exception professional. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would have expected that. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know I did, and I've admitted this and talked to them about it. I mean, I felt openly sort of hostile to them generally. And so you're more of a cosmopolitan person. I mean, I've been here my whole life, and mm-hmm. this is not a very cosmopolitan, it's not like I haven't traveled, but it's different when you've lived various places. Mm-hmm. And I think, when we were off air, you used the word, did you say itinerant? Like moving a lot.
I was moving a lot, right.
Mm-hmm. And so that's a really particular experience where it's almost like a survey mm-hmm. of cities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's exactly what I've been doing. You know, I agree with you with the sentiment with police. I know I've had my run-ins.
Sure.
And
that's going to happen with any profession, right? Though, right? I mean, there's going to be.
Well, and also an activist. And so I have been cleared off of a site because of because of women's reproductive rights. So protesting that. And
in Portland?
No.
Okay.
No. And so, you know, I've certainly had that. And I've always felt when I have seen or been around the police, a little bit of like discomfort. I mean, driving through Oklahoma in the 70s always made me very nervous.
Yeah.
But I just have to say that the police that I have come to know in the Northwest, in Portland, and not to say that that wouldn't be true elsewhere, it's just that I live there, have all been very, very professional. I have seen them when I have called in, for example, some dude smoking fentanyl in at the top of the alley. So this is right outside my living room window. And when I say living room and kitchen, I live in a 380 square foot studio. So I live in a very modest place, but I make it, it works for me. And so this guy is under a blanket. Now, my daughter, who has moved from New Orleans, living across the hall, she said, you know, I saw this. I thought, I didn't even know that there was a person here. She alerts me to it. And I'm doing work because I pick up garbage around the building every day. And I go to this guy, and he's covered with a blanket. I pull the blanket, and it's like, you cannot stay here, right? You need to move on. And he gives me his response, you know, cunt this, blah, blah, that. And he continues to, and he fires up fentanyl. And so I tell him I'm going to call the police, which I do. He has a coat over him, and it appears as if he's masturbating. And the police come, they uncover him and, you know, ask him. I'm kind of out of the scene there so they can do their job. But as I'm understanding, they're asking him, what does he want to take with him? He selects things. He leaves stuff behind, which of course I'm going to have to clean up. And I do, but I find his fentanyl pipe and I take it over there. And the policeman says, just a second. And then he says, this guy wants to go into rehab, so we're not going to take the pipe. It's like, okay. But in the midst of everything are a variety of women's panties, all sorts of other residue. And it's like, here's a guy, I don't know this to be a fact, but he would be, you know, I've been around the block a few times. My sense tells me here is somebody who's a predator. And he is living on the street and he has a drug habit and he is utterly unsafe in the community. But here he is out in my community. How did this happen? Right? Because it's not his first time, I'm sure, you know, being confronted, being in jail, but there he is. And so the police that were dealing with this guy were so professional. It was a man and a woman. And, you know, I was impressed with it. Another officer, Eli Arnold, who unfortunately did
not. Eli is great.
He's wonderful.
He's been on the show a couple of times. I like him so much.
Yeah.
He is so, he's one of the most compassionate, positive people I've ever met in my life. Right. That man always has a smile on his face.
Right.
No matter what.
I know. It's amazing.
He loves his family.
Yeah.
He loves this city.
Yep.
He loves living in the city. Yep. He's relatively, I mean, he talks about how he was a Bernie supporter. He has a gay child. He's relatively progressive person. I mean, he's a very interesting, complicated kind of guy.
You know more about him than I do because I only know him as an officer. I've had some interaction, like I supported him during his campaign and tried to do things for his campaign, but I don't know this about his family, but that's impressive.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's really cool.
So interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've seen him in action. Really?
Yeah.
So compassionate. And, you know, there are other officers in the Northwest area. I have their text contact, their days off. And the issue is that they cannot arrive. They cannot show up because they're busy. There's just so few of them and they're busy doing other things. So I understand it. I will still send them photos. I will still, because I'm there and I see it happening.
And my understanding is the message is we want you to continue to report and we want you to continue to send photos because even if we can't respond, we can collect data about complaints and then we can increase patrols and we can, you know, try to argue for more personnel.
Right, right. That's exactly it. So I call in. I know that it's not going
to
happen.
And if they can come, they want to.
They want to. Exactly. There was a woman just here. I can show this to you because I'm compiling for the Stadiumhood database images. And
is there going to be a neighborhood database that you all are putting together?
That's true.
Citizens are putting together.
There, and I think that there is a new drug on the street because it's very, very strong. There, since Sunday, I came around the north face of my building. So this is right underneath my and my daughter's windows, and it's at Cooch Plaza. And there are people that are getting high, and there are people that are selling. And I just was like, you know, get the hell out of here, and how dare you? And there was, this woman was left, and this is as far as she got. And and this is how she was left.
So, I mean, you're showing me a picture of a woman who appears to be fully clothed, but she appears to be, she could be dead. She's on her back. Dead.
Yeah, she was.
Limbs are splayed in what looks like a very uncomfortable position, and this is concrete.
And it's raining.
Yeah,
and it's raining.
Looks extremely uncomfortable.
And this is a woman that
she appears unconscious at
she
best.
She is unconscious. She's completely passed out. And she got like 20 feet and down. She was down. And she was down for probably, I'm going to say, at least an hour. I called 311.
That's a long time.
It's a long time. I called then the police dispatch for response.
For people who don't know, tell us what 311 is.
Well, 311 is the number that you would call for city services, like you want to clean up, you know, garbage or a dump, or you want to report a illegal campsite. In my case, I called because I needed to get help for this woman. They told me to call 911 and tell them that I needed a, not a rapid response, what is it called? Portland response for
Portland Street response.
Portland Street response, exactly, for this woman. So 311 was the wrong number to call, but I didn't know this.
Yeah, and it's so hard to navigate this Byzantine
absolutely.
System.
It's like all of these silos, which is also insane in a city that's supposed to be as technically advanced as
Portland. Isn't it?
It's like wild. So anyway, I call street response. And then I called again. So it's 30 minutes later. And finally they show up. This is a Sunday. There are no, and I'm asking them, are you going to help her out? And they can't tell me anything because of her rights for privacy. Okay. There are no shelters open. There's nowhere to place her. And the person who.
So they did tell you that?
They did tell me that. And they did. And I said, well, are you going to leave her here? Because I'm thinking, well, what can I do? You know, what do I have at my disposal? What can I figure out here? And they said, well, we can't place her, but we can promise you we're not going to leave her here. And I'm thinking, well, where the hell is she going to go?
Yeah, because as far as I know, Portland Street Response can't transport.
Unless they can, as I understand.
They do that now.
But if somebody, in this case says, well, and I don't know this to be a fact, but this is what I think I heard them say. They can't move her unless, if she says she doesn't want to be.
Right.
Which is also insane to me because you can't, here's the analogy. This is kind of the parallel that I think about. There is the death with dignity here, right?
Yeah.
But you have to be lucid.
That's right.
To be able to say, okay, now I'm going to decide. I'm going to go. Let's say
and
I have terminal
cancer.
You have
to have
cancer.
Your full
Correct.
Faculties. So
That's
you can't
I mean.
Use it if you have like a dementia diagnosis.
Correct. But in cases like this, where someone is addicted, or let's say they're mentally ill or whatever it is, if they say, no, I want to stay where I'm at, then okay.
Right.
It makes no sense to me. Because people that need the services aren't going to be scooped up and put in some dungeon somewhere, right? The idea is to provide services, mental health, rehabilitation services, placement, someplace out of the rain for people. And this
isn't that what we're worried about, though, that they're, I mean, my understanding is, and you may have been traveling during some of this and may have heard about it or seen it or talked to people involved in it. But it seems like around during John F. Kennedy and his sister Rosemary not seeing the abuses of institutions mm-hmm. and seeing some civil rights issues there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are terrible places. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we've sort of swung too far in the other direction. And now we don't want to institutionalize anybody. And there is somewhere in the middle.
That's right.
Where functional cities, like you said, have services and systems where it's not a dungeon and it's mental health treatment and it's mm-hmm. drug treatment. And that's what they prioritize.
Right. Well, exactly. And we aren't in the 50s and 60s anymore.
Right.
So
right.
we have evolved. And Portland is not a poor city. Portland is not Jackson, Mississippi.
No,
there is money here.
There's so much.
And
there's a weird amount. I mean, if you look at our city of Portland budget, it's more than much bigger cities. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's sort of my criticism is that Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, these are wealthy, wealthy cities.
There's no excuse.
There isn't an excuse. There isn't an excuse. There is a, I don't know what it is. I could give it some adjectives, but honestly, I don't know. It just seems to me it's a lot of greed and not willing to share, not willing to do the right thing. Not willing to maybe make a mistake, but stand up and let's address this and let's address it today and let's make it happen now.
The greed is from whom, do you think?
I think it's from fear of making a mistake and losing your political constituency, potentially. Maybe that might be part of it. I think it's also... like I have invited the county council, the Multnomah Council people. I have invited other government officials. Come stay at my apartment. I won't charge you anything. Come and stay for a week and I'll move out and see how that feels. So
my understanding is the chair of Multnomah County, Jessica Vega Peterson, walked the stadium hood. Neighborhood sort of recently mm-hmm. to end of December or something.
I was there. I was with her.
What can you say about that? Or what did you see occur? I mean, do you think she observed what you're talking about?
I think that she certainly, it was there. You couldn't have, you know, I come from art. You could not have created a better context for her that was not programmed. It was just, this is what it is every day. You had the young kid that was high as hell, talking about how he has the right to be this, that, and the other thing and how awful the police are. And then you have the police that are coming up and he's part of this series of vagrants that are hanging out, that are getting high, and the police are just like, very professional. You have people in tents that you're walking around that are on the sidewalk, the garbage, the waste, meaning human waste, all the stuff. So she's there. She's walking the neighborhood. I gave her images of what my experience is and with... you know, notes underneath so she could know where it is and what day it was. And it was all within like the week or so that she did the walk with us.
Was this via email or?
No, I gave her handouts. I gave her leave behinds. I wanted her to have printed material. So it was
paper. Did you get any kind of response that you heard or saw from her when she walked the neighborhood or have heard since?
She did. She said that, I'm not going to be able to remember
quote it perfectly,
exactly.
Sure.
Right. So paraphrasing, she said something to the effect of, you know, she thanked us. She acknowledged that, you know, this is going on. I don't recall her saying anything about this is going to make us move in a certain, this is going to inspire me to do anything. I don't remember her saying this is untenable. This is not a way to live. This is not how a neighborhood should be. I don't remember those words. She may have said it, not in my presence, but I know that she saw what we are living with. I know that she walked by the schools that are the school that's right across the street from me. So, she sees the context. There's another image I could show you.
Which school is across the street from you? Is it a public school?
It's the Catholic school. It's the Catholic elementary school that is across.
Is it Cathedral?
It's Cathedral. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. They seem to be pretty vocal about how they're suffering.
Yeah. Well, they are. I mean, we're suffering in the same way. They're my neighbors.
Yeah. Everybody in that area is.
So here is, this would have been,
I mean, including the
Monday
people on the streets themselves, of course. Right. This is, it's about addressing their suffering, right?
So the guy on the left.
So you're showing me a picture of.
He also was passed out after some, you know, whatever substance he was using, but he behaved in the same way as the woman.
And he looks like he could be dead.
He did look
like
he could be dead.
At the very least unconscious.
And what you don't see
there. He's face down, it looks like.
What you don't see there, his pants are pulled down. The guy squatting next to him.
His arms are underneath him, which, you know, makes me think about lack of circulation potential. I mean, he's not a small man.
No. And
then there's somebody next to him. Looks like they might be doing drugs.
He's trying to get, he's the guy that's pulling his pants up. The other person is trying to get him to stand up. And I was actually watching this and thinking, oh, he's going to flip over the railing onto the cars.
And it's a,
it's an on-ramp. Yeah, it's an on-ramp.
And then to the left of them in this picture is what, you know, looks like materials for living on the street.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Tents and things. And so you saw this person go down relatively quickly, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Here he is.
Yeah, it's completely. So he's in this one, he's not sitting upright, but he's not face down quite yet.
He's face down in his own lap. He's just folded
in his
over.
Own lap.
Yeah.
But folded over. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it looks like he has his shoe off and it looks, you know, it's recent. So it's cold. We know it's cold. There's no leaves on the trees. This is on concrete, right in a pathway. Mm-hmm. And he looks like he could be dead here too.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, at the very least unconscious.
Exactly. So that's the reality that I live in. And it's every day. It's every day.
Why do you think the blame lies with Multnomah County?
Because I'm looking for another photo that you will find quite interesting. I don't know if I can find it. Because Multnomah County prevents people from being incarcerated and continuing to be incarcerated, meaning there are people that I know that are sober alcoholics, and had they not been arrested and taken to a drunk tank and gotten sober, and it may have been repeatedly, but it happened repeatedly, but enough time for them to get sober and suffer consequences for their behavior in the public domain, they would not have continued to get their lives together. They would have continued to serve whatever their addiction is. And what Multnomah County is doing is they talk about harm reduction, but what it is enabling people like these people that I've just shown you, enabling them to continue this kind of lifestyle, if you can call it that, in the public domain at the consequence of everybody else. So people that are trying to live a life that is contributes, that is productive, that maintains the social contract that we all inherently understand because we grow up with that understanding. And Multnomah County is allowing the fabric of our society to continue to rot like canvas in a desert sun. It's just being eaten away. I don't understand how the county officials can justify that this is the correct way to govern a county, to govern a group. Pete, who you had earlier, he's been advocating for the separation, for the city of Portland to separate from Multnomah County, and I absolutely 100% agree. The economic center is the city of Portland, at least, hopefully, knock on wood, it still is, who knows. But the funds that we need to manage ourselves need to be centered where we live. So that is by the library where you were attacked, Old Town, my neighborhood, the Northwest, where, and I have seen it, where the drop-off for quantities of drugs come from out of state. It's off the 405 and the 5, going to the tents, and then the cars, the dealers are leaving. So the little junkies here that are selling modest amounts to keep their own high going, that is, it's a nuisance, it's horrible, and it should not be, but we've got this sort of freeway.
Something much bigger.
Oh yeah, it's a much bigger story. And the county officials just aren't, they're not getting it. They're not understanding. And I think that's where the naivete or the political will or the fear, or I don't know what it is, but there isn't, it kind of like, how often do you need to see this over and over again, hear the story? It's kind of like what I was asking you before we started this conversation. It's like, where are these stories going? And I know that you are, uploading, you're providing these podcasts for people to hear. And I think to myself, how much evidence, how many times does Multnomah County, right? I mean,
I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's why
those Multnomah County elections were stunning to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was stunning to me.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And I don't know if it's that people don't understand the import of the county. I mean, can you tell us, like, why is the blame with the county, for instance, and not with the city?
Because the county holds the purse strings, I think. And the county...
For mental health and addiction specifically, based on the charter.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
That's true.
Yeah. And they also make the laws by which our police need to adhere. And the police themselves are like, I can't do anything. I can't do this. I can't arrest this person. I can't remove this person. You have heard about PPOP that posts up on 19th and Cooch. And I live on 16th. So I'm 3 blocks away.
It sounds like it's a nonprofit, the way Pete Cold explained it on his episode, nonprofit organization. And it looks like, based on media reports, nonprofit organization that hands out drug supplies in your neighborhood.
That's correct. So I'm going to look this up.
And there's a fair amount of controversy about whether they should be doing that.
Oh my God, yes. So.
And it sounds like you fall squarely in the no category of.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
the idea of So what are we called? Portland People's Outreach Project. And the idea that what I understand there, I'm sure they must have a mission statement. They're a nonprofit, which means they get public funds, but they also get county funds. That their statement is that
he wasn't sure if they got county.
I understand nobody that was. They do, but we haven't found the source yet.
Okay. Right?
Yeah. So let's see. Oh, here we go. Their philosophy. This is cute. Embraces a need-based model.
This is on their website.
Yep. Because we recognize that there is a vital need for clean injection supplies in our community, as evidenced by the extremely high rate of hepatitis C and by the frequent occurrences of abscesses, cellulitis, and other forms of infection among Portland's injection drug use population. Yada, yada, yada.
So
they work to enhance the lives of the drug users by meeting their needs in a respectful, non-judgmental manner.
This is what their website says.
Correct.
Okay.
And I'm like, do it, dude, but do it inside a facility. Don't do it on my street. Don't do it a block away from my schools. Don't do it because this is not a needle exchange. People call it that it is. What they do, and I've been in cities with needle exchanges, so there is no accountability. Person will come and they will literally get handfuls of syringes. And I clean them up every day. So over the weekend, today's Thursday.
You're saying there's no exchange happening. It's just a handout. And there's no data collected.
No.
That could be protected by, let's say, HIPAA or something in a clinic. Where that they could be kept confidential by a clinician or something, where we understand who these people are and we can keep track of them and we can determine whether or not we're actually reducing disease.
Right. And since there is no accountability, there is no evidence, there is no proof of concept from PPOP that there isn't needle sharing because there's no needle exchange. You're not exchanging one for one. You're handing out.
Wouldn't they point to data or studies or something that, I mean, this is just my guess, that they would say shows that that contributes to a reduction and that clean needles contribute to a reduction in disease.
Mm-hmm.
Just generally, wouldn't they argue that?
Are you asking?
Yeah, I'm asking what you think they'd say.
Oh, what would PPOP say?
Yeah.
I have no idea because they're not open to conversation.
Oh, you've tried to talk to them.
Right. Very defensive, very armored. They already know that they are coming into communities where it's not a harm reduction program. The first time, and the only time, to be quite honest, that I was engaged with them when the neighborhood decided, you know, parents, educators, people like myself, it's like, we want you to know that we don't like this. And there were people that were present. In fact, there was one young man who was present who worked on social services, who worked in harm reduction, and was trying to have a conversation. And they were absolutely patronizing and insulting, and generally, you know, just being silly. So there is no dialogue that is that they are welcoming. And so I have no idea what they would say. I have a sense what they would say as a defensive organization. And they are, in my opinion, what I witness is they are, without exception, they just believe, regardless of what the context tells them, regardless of what the neighborhood will say, that, or even the statistics of deaths, et cetera, they will continue to move forward. Like what they're doing is, you know, they're saving the world one junkie at a time. And, I myself don't choose to be punitive. My empathy is taking a vacation, but I still am a realist. And a person who has an addiction, who lives on the street, is not going to get clean. And to enable this person to continue to live on the street by providing them the paraphernalia that they need while they're living on the street does no good. There's no positive. There's no good outcome there. It just, again, puts it in the lap of the people, the citizens that live there, the residents that live there, the kids that have to walk through it. Myself, I have to walk through it. My daughter walks through it. You know, it's nonsense. It's ridiculous. And people are moving away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. $1 billion a year in tax revenue and counting.
Right.
How do you know that people on the street who are being handed this drug paraphernalia aren't going to get off the street and get clean? Because what I've heard, not PBOP, but organizations like that argue at the county, and I'm sure you've heard this when you go to the county to testify or you go to city council. Mm. What I've heard these organizations argue is that we're building trust, and so we can connect them with services. Maybe not PPOP specifically, but I mean, I've heard the organizations that get county funding say, well, we can connect them with services, but they have to want it. The evidence shows that they're not going to be successful in recovery unless they want it. And in order to assist them in that endeavor, we're here. And we can establish trust in the meantime with clean drug paraphernalia and being a place of no judgment.
You see my smile?
Yeah.
You see the smile on my face?
Yes.
Yeah, as you're saying this. So, okay, let's unpack that a little bit. Making a connection so that the user will feel safe and comfortable. I think that's a cute notion. I think that's a cute idea. That a person won't get clean or sober unless they want to. That a statement by itself is absolutely true. There is nobody that I know on this God's green earth in all of the cities that I have traveled, in all the countries I have been to, if they are living on the street and they are getting the monies in whatever way they need to, through sex for drugs, stealing, turning in cans and bottles, whatever it is, if they have a vehicle by which they can purchase their addiction, their drug of addiction.
I know you're emphasizing a point, but when you tap the table, the mic picks it up.
I'm sorry. So when a person has this ability to fund their addiction through any means that they want, I'll say this again without tapping the table, and that could be through sex for drugs. It could be through sex. It could be through, and by that I mean pimping other people out. It could be through stealing. It could be through trading in bottles or cans, whatever it is, whatever that vehicle is, by people to get money to buy their addiction, their drug of choice, while they're living on the street. That's going to continue to happen. So when an agency says, well, we are going to give them the information that they may need to make the choice to get clean and sober if they feel good about it, that is such bullshit, because no junkie is going to say, you know what, I think I'm ready to get sober. They'll say that until the pain starts. And then the cycle begins again. And it's just, unless a person is And in some cases, very true, forced into an environment where there is recovery around them, then it's just not going to happen. And I would argue that if I was the queen of the world and the queen of Portland, I would change the laws that when people are in tents, no, you may not live in a tent on the street. I would ensure that there are places for people to go because we have the financing and we have the design intellect to provide that. I would not allow people to use on the street. You can't drink on the street. Why the fuck should you be able to use fentanyl or shoot up on the street? And I have photos of people helping other people shoot up.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't be allowed. In addition to that, obviously, the mental health and the rehabilitation services are lacking. And I would also offer a place, not on the public streets. If people are not going to get sober, then give them a place where they can remain high, but not in my backyard, not in my area where I need to walk, not in front of a school. Provide a spot then. But this whole notion of we're going to continue to ask a junkie, are you ready to get off the street today? No, that's silly. That's silly. And it's naive. And it's coming from a place of an ideology. We discussed this earlier, this utopian ideology that everybody is dancing on rainbows and all have these, you know, higher motivations for doing the right thing. It's nonsense. And that's what laws are for. And the social contract.
What do you say to people? Like I've heard arguments like, well, hey, we're in the middle of this addiction crisis and you just don't want to see it. You don't want these people. You just don't want your nice little world tainted by the reality of this addiction crisis. Mm. And you want it to be out of your sight.
Mm. Mm.
And you're treating these people by saying, go do that, but do it elsewhere. It's a inhuman way to live and to it's not grappling with reality.
And so your point is that you have heard this from people that are saying to you, you're just a privileged person. Okay, well, let's talk about that privilege and what it enables the county to do. How much taxes do you pay? How much do I pay in taxes? Where do I shop? Where do I walk on the street? So it's not about me not wanting to see this. This is about me wanting to live in a society that takes care of all of its citizens, including me.
And including... I would add just personally, the way I look at it, including the addict,
absolutely,
including the mentally ill. And absolutely, in fact, first and foremost, them, because I think you survey most Portlanders, they're happy to pay for this kind of thing.
And they do.
And they want to. Every single ballot measure that makes it sound like we're going to get some drug rehab and detox and some mental health care, it passes.
Right. I am happy to pay the money that I pay because I want to live in a society that is functioning and healthy. So that means, and that's exactly what I mean, that everybody is taken care of. And right now, what I see on my streets are the addicts and the homeless people are provided for to live on the street. And so when I say I want to have everybody taken care of, including me, it means please do not ask me to be the mental health facilitator, to be the biohazard collector, to be the defender against raving junkies. Don't ask me to be that person. City, county of Multnomah, you have the funds, you have the agencies, the city of Portland, the county has the intelligence to be able to create a database, to be able to facilitate places where people can be. We understand mental health is, well, the healthcare system is failing in Oregon. So we understand this. So fix that, address it, and provide the services that everybody needs. Right. So.
I don't remember if we captured this off air, but you said, and I agree with you, that cities are living organisms, I think are the words you use.
Yeah.
And that you think that Portland will get better.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think will ultimately happen or needs to happen to get there?
Well, I don't have all the answers, but what I see happening is that citizens, and not all citizens, because not everybody lives in the same context, but I know citizens in my community, the Stadium Hood and Friends of Cooch Park, mostly Stadium Hood, and other individuals that are not engaged in these organizations, people are getting fed up. People are getting fed up. And they are responding as such. And I don't know if it's ultimately going to come down to vigilantism.
Yeah.
Where people are going to just take it into their own hands, or if there's just going to be a mass exodus. And then finally,
I think people are already taking it into, I see it.
Yeah.
You know, I know they're taking it into their own hands. Mm-hmm. Like I haven't seen it. I didn't see it before 2020, but since 2020, I've seen just general workaday citizens that I would have thought didn't really have it in them get confrontational, sometimes even physical.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Carrying bear spray.
Yeah.
Carrying, you know, protection. And absolutely.
I mean, I've seen it defensive. I haven't seen it offensive.
I'm talking about defensive. I don't even know if this guy was high, but I've had people threaten my life.
Yeah.
I've had,
I think a lot of people, I mean, a weird amount of Portlanders.
Right.
Have heard that.
Right. And,
it almost becomes normal.
Right. But it's people are getting high. And so generally my mode of operation is, if I see somebody that looks like they may have a problem, there was a woman in the backside of the Cathedral Elementary School in the little doorway that faces east. So it's not the entrance. It's not the main part. And I saw her kind of hunched over, and I walked over to her and I said, "Are you okay? Do you need help?" That's my first thing. Are you okay? If I don't see evidence of drug use. And so, are you okay? And she goes, "Yeah, I'm fine." And I'm noticing then that she's got foil. And I said, "If you are smoking fentanyl, this conversation is going to change." And she said, "No, I'm just getting myself together." I said, "Okay." And I said, "I want you to know that you are against an elementary school. So that changes the situation for you exponentially." And she's like, "Oh, okay." I told her where Rose Haven was. I said, "Do you know about 311, 211? Do you know about these services?" Yes. And off she went. Other people that will be getting high, and I will see them at the utility box that's at the plaza, and I call frequently, and I've asked PBOT and ODOT, please put a fence around it so that junkies can't hang out there. They put their stash underneath it. There's no answer. But I see, and this just happened a few days ago, this guy is smoking fentanyl And I go, you know, you cannot do this here. You've got a school and there's a building, this residential building, and you are being watched. And I watch him and he gets up finally and moves on, but he is coming at me. So he is coming at me violently. So it's not like, you know, this isn't heroin we're talking about. This is an aggressive,
Different.
Yeah, it's very different. This is an aggressive personality that has been entitled because of 110. The genie is out of the bottle.
The drug decriminalization ballot measure that you and I were talking off air with voted for.
Yeah, exactly. And people were allowed and enabled to use drugs. And during the COVID, I mean, it was the perfect storm. People could stay in their tents, get high, tents weren't removed. And now there is this feeling of don't fuck with me or I'm going to come at you. And it is real. So it's become violent. It has. The streets have become more violent. How is this going to recover? I think that we are going to need more police. I think that we are going to need we're just going to need a strict enforcement of the social contract. You're part of a society. Your behavior is expected to be such. And if it isn't such, then you're not allowed to move freely in society.
So, like, I mean, that seems to me like it would need to be a culture change here.
Yes, I think that that's true. I think it has to come also from the leadership. It just can't be you and me talking about it at your dining room table and me continuing to clean up garbage and junk.
But how do we do that, right? Because we, by we, I mean the royal we, like the majority we, elect these people. And in my opinion, in this last election, we just brought in two more people on Multnomah County. One of them ran the Joint Office of Homeless Services for a time, right? So, I mean, the other one is part of your district. Megan Moyer is from your district.
And
these are people who seem to be on board with what the county's currently doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, their opponents said almost word for word everything you've said today, and they were roundly rejected.
Mm-hmm. Were they not close races?
I don't think they were close.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, we weren't biting nails, you know, waiting for returns. I mean, it was clear sort of early.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that it takes the population to demand that these things are done. And it's harder if you don't have the body politic that shares those views. But I think it takes the citizens to demand it. I really do. I don't know how else. I mean, I don't have the answers, but that's what I think.
What advice do you have for people who, I mean, it sounds like if you're in the Stadium Hood neighborhood, I'll link to the website, the Stadium Hood website, and you can put your email address in there and you can get involved.
That's right. Right.
What advice, if any, do you have for people who don't live within your neighborhood who share your concerns?
I think that while it can be challenging, I think eyes on the street are critical. I think people need to reclaim their streets. If you don't feel comfortable walking alone, don't walk alone. Walk with other people, but don't give it up. Don't give the territory up. Walk. You don't have to confront the junkie. You don't have to confront the person in your garbage, the homeless person, but you do need to be out. You need to be visible. You need to let people know that in numbers, in masses, this is not okay. That's what I think. I think that that's like the first thing. And in parallel, get active, create community, find 2-3 neighbors, start cleaning up around your neighborhood. If it's, you know, start patrolling your neighborhood. By that, I mean walking around, and then connect with other organizations if you choose to, but make your voices heard at the city and the county level. Start making a lot of noise and demanding, not asking. Don't be polite. Don't be polite. Those days are over. Demand that this happens, that there is a turnaround to what's going on in our city, because it can't sustain itself. And if people start avoiding the streets, or buildings are built like happened in Seattle, where you just drive into the base and then you take an elevator up into your condo, that creates ghettos. Nobody's on the street anymore. So it gets taken over by people that have that, you know, it's nefarious. It's just bad news all the way around. So create community, create, know your neighbor, walk in your neighborhood, you know, claim your space. That's what I say.
What's interesting to me is that I think the culture of Portland wants people like you. They want the Laura Currys of the world here. They want people who identify as, would you say gay? Would you say queer?
Queer.
Would you, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sexually diverse anyway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you said your daughter is a person of color. Mm-hmm. They want people like you and your daughter here.
Mm-hmm.
You're an artist. Mm-hmm. You're creating things. You're an interesting cosmopolitan person. I mean, you are what Portland, I think everybody in Portland professes to. You're the demographic everybody wants. Mm. There doesn't seem to be any kind of quibbling about that. It's not like you're not Walmart. You're not Live Nation. There's not a lot of controversy about whether the Laura Currys should be in Multnomah County, I don't think. I mean, I think Portland wants to see itself as a community of artists, as a community that supports artists, as a community that supports people who fall into categories of historical oppression. I think Portland wants to be seen as a place that's good.
I think so too. And I think Portland wants diversity, and they want, they want these things.
That's what they say they want.
That's what they say they want. And it's kind of like, it's a tarted up, party line. It's kind of like when, as a consultant, and I will usually be a sub to an agency, and you can see through the veneer pretty quickly when it's just, they want you to just sex up a message, but there's no substance behind it. And it feels, as I'm just thinking of this right now in the moment, it feels like that's what's happening with Portland. Like, for example, when Governor Kotek said, please don't say bad things about Oregon or Portland, because it's bad for us. And I am thinking, how dare you? How dare you? Come fix this then. It's just like,
Yeah, it felt, I have the same feelings. It feels like a suffocation of activism, or of what we also seem to profess to care about, which is everybody voting, everybody being active in the process, civic education. I mean, I thought the progressive places want everybody to have a say, want everybody to have the ability to vote, and they want people to make their voices heard.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right? We're supposed to be a city of protest.
Right. Exactly.
We're supposed to be a city that, quote unquote, speaks truth to power. Right.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah.
It's this weird cognitive dissonance or something. I don't know. I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like the people that are holding the purse strings have their fingers in their ears, and they're just singing really loudly, you know. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get how The remedies are available. The money is available, and the cause for this effect isn't addressed. So it's up to the citizens.
I appreciate you coming on and talking about it.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this. Yeah, thank you.
It doesn't exist without you. I mean, you're welcome. But also, I mean, and I say that to everybody. I don't know how many. Andy Chandler, who has a podcast called Northwest Fresh that's similar, it's video also, which mine obviously isn't. But you can find it on YouTube and Spotify. And he counted it up once. It's 100 and something different people. It might be more. I don't know. But it's a lot of people that have come on and talked. And I think it's been difficult for a lot of people. You know, they sit and they think about it and they wonder if they should lend their name to something that might be controversial, that a lot of people might disagree with. Or, and so I mean, regardless of what your feelings are about that, I thank you. And thanks to everybody who's done this and come on. And we had, I'll upload this soon. And Karen Chires, she runs the Superette convenience store, her episode. I talked to her yesterday.
Oh, great.
Of course, I talked to Pete Cole. I've talked to a number of people in Stadium Hood and said, hey, anybody who wants to come on and talk about this.
Did you talk to Michelle?
Do it. Maybe. I don't know.
She's.
I don't know if I've talked to her directly.
She really sort of got Stadium Hood going online. She's the one that's been doing, getting that momentum.
I mean, she's a real force.
She is. And she is so articulate. She is so well-spoken. Really, really quite good.
Well, she's welcome. I mean, I haven't already talked to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd have to go through and look, but she's welcome anytime.
Yeah.
I just want to, you know, let citizens and people come on and talk about what's going on. And this is I know this has been going on in your neighborhood for a while, but there wasn't the kind of organization there is now.
That's right.
And this is very unique, and it's getting a fair amount of, I noticed last summer it was getting a fair amount of media attention that it really wasn't getting at all before.
Mm-hmm. It's happened. Well, Pete, and you probably know this, he organized the initial gathering last summer at the Cathedral Elementary School where people got together, citizens got together to discuss the issue. The police were there. There were some representatives of other organizations. I remember this one young lady was kind of, I got the impression that she was sort of wagging her finger at us a little bit in her accusatory NIMBY, you know, you're sort of NIMBYs and saying we've got more social services in the Northwest than any other part of the city. So we are going to have people that will need services more. And I think she missed the point. The point being that exactly what you and I said, it's not that we don't want people to be healthy and sheltered. It's that we want to stop Multnomah County from enabling people to continue to be addicted living on the street.
Yeah, I would say from leaving them on the street to die.
Yes.
From dying.
Yeah.
They're overdosing
in
weirdly record numbers, and it just continues to go up.
That's right.
Like, that's we're exactly the right. One county that can't seem to wrap our, doesn't seem to want to wrap our arms around this thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Washington County is handling it. Clackamas County is handling it. I mean, it's not great, but they seem to be vocal about it, and their numbers seem to be going down while ours are increasing every day.
And I do believe there is a new something, something on the street from what I've been seeing outside
really
my window.
It's scary.
It is scary. It is scary. People are like getting flattened by whatever drug is hitting the streets now.
Yeah. And I think it's just important to emphasize they're dying.
Yeah.
This is not marijuana. This is not even heroin.
Right.
Most people by now have read, whether or not it's hit your city, most people have read about fentanyl and seem to have some understanding of how dangerous it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, at this county level in Multnomah County, there's just not a lot of discussion about, I mean, there's discussion about Narcan, but that's where it seems to end.
Yeah, and that's not the answer. Narcan is not the answer. And I've heard that from people that were interviewed about PPOP, about that organization. And, you know, that they hand out Narcan and they also hand out women's sanitary supplies and they hand out food, you know, like protein bars and all that. That's great. But the fact remains, you know, there is no centralized, how do we make the city, the county healthy? Not how do we perpetuate this, you know, dysfunction. And that's what's going on. It's just a perpetual keep feeding the monster and pretend like it's okay, or we're doing the best we can, which is not good enough. Yeah.
Laura Curry, thank you.
Thank
Stadium Hood Neighborhood West in Northwest Portland. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.